that at the radio wave, which would be the microwave, they see it as a blood, which is a complete false. I disagree with that.
Yeah, but don't forget now, this is a non-ionizing wave, far infrared, hitting your and my cathode of our photo multiplier tube. And yes, because that cathode has a certain temperature, and the temperature has been changed a little bit by the input energy. Let me drop it. And that cathode is continuously emitting a black body radiation. That's not what the photomultiplier measures. The photomultiplier tube got a hold of real free electrons that hit that first dynode.
No. It was a different way. The thing is, I'm sorry to interrupt you because we have no more time. In order for you to see the energy come, you gotta have to have something in between for the certain wavelength. So you have a crystal, and the crystal actually is able to convert a wavelength of invisible light to the micro explosions in that crystal, as it would be sodium ionite doped with whatever. And then the photomultiplier is reacting to those explosions. That would be it.
I can use a photomultiplier without an intermediate crystal. The real infrared wave is directly hitting the cathode of the photomultiplier tube. That cathode emits electrons, and the series of dynodes start multiplying those electrons by secondary emission, start multiplying. It was a real electron emitted from that cathode by a non-ionizing infrared wave without an intermediate crystal. Over to you, Wes.
Yeah, it depends which wavelength we're talking about. We're talking about the visible light or near-infrared light. Yes, it could happen, but mostly what they're trying to do is they're trying to use the photo screen for it, but it's a special photo. It's not the photo screen that is used for the X-rays. But yes, actually, I suggest you to get one of the photo multipliers. It's a beautiful fun with it, and to experience.
Yeah, the problem is I am talking about infrared. No intermediate crystal, a pure infrared wave. It's the cathode of my photomultiplier, and that photomultiplier tube will find electrons emitted by this non-ionizing wave. So right now you and I have got a little bit of a problem of explaining where are those free electrons coming from that non-ionizing wavelength that we're using with infrared hitting it. Okay, this was TechNet number 1497 in the series that began roughly September of 1982. We've hit the bewitching hour. We'll see you guys again next week, as long as John and Paul and I and Hal stay healthy. We'll be back next week, and we'll almost settle some of these issues. Aren't we going to settle them all next week, John? Isn't that our promise? KC2WGB, K2LAW.
Oh, absolutely, Dick. So stay tuned in. Don't miss next week. All the answers are coming. I want to thank everybody for joining the net. I'll say 73. Everyone have fun. KC2WGB.
God bless you all. Be kind to each other.
Thank you very much, Dick. John, you going up there?
We just stay here until it times out. It usually goes another 20, 25 minutes.
DC2IS.
As you guys talk, I'm going to make a coffee.
DC2IS, KC2WGB. Hello, Bill.
Hey, how are things?
Slowly getting warmer. And I hope that's a trend. How you doing tonight?
Doing all right. Had a nice Red Cross drill yesterday. That Brookhaven Aries participated. It was much appreciated. And things are going well, yeah.
Well, that's good to hear. Good net tonight. I think everybody had some answers they deserved. And good to hear you in there again. Been, I tell you, with some of the problems we've had with the repeater, the mailbag has slowed down, but it picked up this week a little bit. But, boy, that can make it rough.
Happy
of the problem. But that's all right. Dick knows everything, so we're not worried.
Yeah, I don't think Dick knows about software-defined radio, though, right? I have a question about IQ signals, in-phase/quadrature signals, and the nature of those signals.
Well, I know they have quadrature detectors, which means they're 90 degrees out of phase. How they're applied in that I know nothing about the software-defined radios. I have software-operated radios. That's about it.
Right, like a serial interface to a radio as opposed to where the computer is doing the tuning after the, I forget the name of the technique, superheterodyne portion, AC2IS.
Yeah, exactly. They're software-driven. The wind radios are the ones that I have. All receivers. Excellent stuff. And nice software comes with it. But, yeah, they have some great software radios, and they're getting more popular.
Right, yeah, I'm working with software-defined radio, and it seems like it's common there for the output physical radio, the handoff to the software side, is via IQ, in-phase and quadrature. And I guess I made some assumptions about the nature of the IQ signals, and now that I'm trying to play with them directly rather than using an SDR application, it's clear that I do not have a full understanding of what's going on there in AC2IS.
Well, you have two people very familiar with that. Dick is one, and Eric, KE2EJ. He'd probably be able to give you an excellent explanation of that.
Okay, Dick usually says my signal is not very good. How's my signal right now?
A little noisy, but you're in there much better than you were before. Maybe you're back up in your tippy toes?
Yes, on tippy toes, and I also turned off all of the lights in the house, and I don't know if fluorescent lights interfere. I can hold my radio near one of my fluorescent lights. Even when it's off, I get a little static. I don't understand that at all. AC2IS.
Well, if you're fairly sure it's coming from that lamp or that device, that does not sound good. Could be something arcing in there. If the power's off, that's very strange.
Yeah, it's a new lamp. It could just be that corner of the room is haunted. No, I'm not sure. AC2IS.
Don't go there. Yeah, I'll tell you. Ham radio, it's wonderful because you can run into so many different fluky things, and when you find the answer to some of them, they don't make sense. Like how some of these silly antennas work that people design, ugly as hell, but work beautifully. Yeah, this is an adventure that never ends.
Right. Well, I'm going to be going back to doing some online research, so I'll be on the side. Thanks for your input. AC2IS.
Okay, Bill. Have fun. Keep working on the stuff. I'll talk to you down the line. KC2 WGB.
KC2 WGB. This is N2HUH.
In the beginning of the week. found out, like, I didn't have enough blood. So there wasn't enough blood in my system to carry oxygen around, and I was, like, passing out. So they had to give me blood and try to figure out how come I like, lost it, or whether I was losing it, or I don't know. So, but anyway, I'm feeling okay now.
Actually, that's new one on me. I got a complete, I have to say complete ignorance, but I'm glad you're okay. So you weren't losing it. I'm assuming you weren't losing it. It would have been nice if it was from a nice, sexy female vampire, if you were losing it. But we all have our fantasies, I guess. That's one of mine, I guess. let's see. How's your diet? Did you ever find out what caused?
Not really. They ran a whole gambit of tests and stuff, but we're going to play it, you know, play it by ear right now and keep an eye on it. I don't know. I think a nice redheaded nurse sounds better than a vampire. But then again, that's just me.
Oh, a redheaded nightmare. I said a nice, sexy female vampire, a redheaded nurse who's actually really a vampire. That's basically part of my same fantasy. I mean, you know, it's what you would call dangerous. That would be, like, dangerous, very dangerous, to allow this sexy vampire to girl to drain some of your blood.
Maybe a cute blonde candy striper. I don't know.
I don't know if I might have seen something like that in some kind of movie or comedy or something. I don't know what. It's in my mind. But no, I don't understand it. It would bother me that there's no resolution. There's no reason for it. Are you not eating well, or maybe there's no variety or something? I have no idea. I'm stumped. But I don't want to belabor it if you don't want to talk about it. Again, I'm glad to hear you're okay.
I'm all right now. I feel much better. More peppy. I had, like, no ambition to do much of anything, and I guess that was the reason why.
Is that the reason why you stopped putting things for sale on eBay?
Well, actually, we just listed a whole bunch of stuff over the past few weeks on eBay. I made like $200, and my son made like $300, and now I just listed about 20 other items. So, no, I'm back on eBay.
Okay. Well, I thought I might have say a few weeks. It's hard. Maybe I just missed it. I didn't hear from you for a while. I should have sent an email, actually. But I looked at eBay for some reason to see if you were listing anything, and then I must have got interrupted. I would have had to go on to another account and send you an email. But okay. When you get back out there, keep your eyes out for any astronomy eyepieces and whatever they come across.
Oh yeah, yard sales and stuff. Actually, I went to a yard sale on Saturday, and I put a whole box or a whole tin. Maybe there's about between 30 and 40 of them, all handmade hardwood spinning tops. You know, they were all handmade, and some of them are pretty intricate, you know, and really neat. And I get the whole thing for $20, and then I look on eBay, you know, and, like, I could probably sell each one for $5, so I got I cleaned them all up. I gave them a nice coat of a wood oil, and I got to start listing them. I want to list some of the nicer ones first and see what they sell for.
Yeah, you never know until you until you try. Let's see, what do I have? I have a box of old vintage unused greeting cards. I don't know if anybody collects those things or if there's any desire for that. Before I use it for my astronomy bonfire armchair viewing, I'll see if anybody's interested in that kind of thing.
Could be. There's always somebody collecting something, you know.
Yeah, you would never know until you look. Okay. So let's see. Did you watch that Cosmos series that started on TV? The remake of the more, I guess, high tech Cosmos series.
No, but I did see something on News 12 the other day. Suffolk Community College has a little observatory, and in the next few months they're going to open it up to the public.
Did you happen to note what size instrument, and would you say Suffolk County or Suffern County? What did you say?
Oh, Suffolk Community College. I think it was the Selden campus, but they have an observatory, and they said that they were getting ready and they were going to open it up to the public soon.
Okay, I'll see if I can go online and check out what type and size instrument they have, or instruments.
I'm here in front of the computer. I guess I can try and see if I can find out.
Okay, because I don't have a computer at this particular part of the house. So let me see. We were out of commission for a little while, I would imagine. So I get you back. Because I haven't heard you for, I'd say, at least a month or two.
Yeah, I've been laying low. I've been on a little bit, but I made a few calls, and I didn't. I talked to Ray the other day, and John a couple of times, but not too many.
Oh, radio. Yeah, as usual, I'm at the salt mine. I just got in a little while ago, and I always turn on the radio here as I, have a couple of slices of cheese, glass of water, whatever, a little snack. Last time I ate was about 7 o'clock today, so that's quite a few hours that goes by. I have to have a little something. And I always turn on the radio and see who's on. And 2HOH.
I'm gonna just put it on the side for a little bit. If I find any information out on that, I'll give you a call back or the next time I talk to you.
Okay, no problem. I mean, there's always a chance I may not turn on a computer tonight and I'll forget, but okay, sounds fine. I just like to know what size instruments they have this way. Is it worth the trip for me or not? That type of thing. And there's no telling what kind of eyepieces I might be interested in being able to see them, but I still need a few more neat Japanese fossils to complete my collection for vinyl viewing. You still there, Don?
Yeah, I'm just trying to look up that thing on the computer, you know, so I have to do both.
Okay. All right. That's why I thought I'd do some talking while you're listening, but like I was saying, I needed a, give you an example, the 26mm eyepiece comes in 3 or 4 different sizes and varieties, and it's almost like I have one of each of those, so I still need one 2-3 more to actually have a pair for each different variety. And I need another 32mm Japanese possible to complete the vinyl viewing collection.
I found it. It's in the Selden campus. They built it into the Smithtown Science Building. So it's on the roof of the Smithtown Science Building, and it has a Mead 10-inch 0.25M LX200 in it, I guess.
And that's it?
Has a SBIG ST-4 CCD camera, several filters and eyepieces, a 22-foot dome.
Well, I don't want to knock them, but, you know, it's probably at least, I would probably have to guess two echelons of darker sky than I have here for stargazing. It's a superior sight. But gee whiz, my telescope is bigger than this.
Well, I mean, that's what it says that is there, so I don't know what to say.
Well, yeah, now you know why I was asking, because before I go out of my way, I already know they have, they could have darker skies than I have with less light pollution, but, you know, my instrumentation is superior, so, probably I can see just as good a view of Jupiter than I would there, you know, that type of thing, so, they would beat me in the dark sky objects and certain constellations, I guess, viewing. But anyway, very good. I thank you for that information.
No problem. I mean, this is all new. I mean, they just did this, so I would imagine in the near future they'll probably be upgrading it, you know, because they built a really nice observatory there, you know, big dome and stuff, so I'm sure somebody will cough up funds to put something better in there.
Yes, yes, well, I can only hope for a New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, and slightly below the blackout or East Coast blackout, and I'd be in pretty good form on a clear night.
Anyway, I'm going to sign right now. We actually have company here that are visiting from Georgia, so they're up from Georgia. So I'm going to go out and make my presence known.
Oh, okay. Well, too bad we didn't have a dark sky. You could have showed him the telescope, but unfortunately, this has been the worst 2 months that I've ever seen. So anyway, enjoy your company and talk to you next time. I hope you find a definite resolution to your situation and stay well. Take care. 73-SOHUH.
All right, thanks a lot, and I'll catch you later on. And to LD Weitzer.
What do you say, Andy? 2-HUH and 2-ACG.
Sorry about that. My radio just defaulted, Dave. Sorry about that. Good evening.
Hey, good evening to you. What does that mean when your radio defaults? What happens?
Well, I just noticed that when it malfunctioned. When I hit push the talk button, I saw no carrier, so that means it did not transmit. I think this mobile radio is notorious for having that problem. So, because I've had it, well, when I first got this radio, it didn't work at all. The phase lock loop was locked, so I did repair. did a few things to his radio. It didn't work at all, and it didn't transmit. But now it one out of maybe one every 50 key ups, it will not transmit. So, or the PL doesn't work. It actually could be either way. So it's a common problem with this particular Radio Shack radio, from what I hear.
Okay. It's funky. You got a funky radio. They're very good. I forgot how big your scope is. I think you said it's a 12 or something like that. I remember years ago going out to Stony Brook. They have open house astronomy nights, and they have a telescope. Well, they have a few telescopes, but they have one in an observatory. If I remember correctly, it's either a 14 or a 16 inch.
Well, I came close to the 14, but I just missed it. No, my estimation is that I don't have enough outdoor, field experience, but I believe that I could probably get just a good view of planets or Jupiter, for instance, with my scope here than I could with their scope there. They would have an edge on stars and deep sky objects that over me with my light pollution. Because when I went to South America, I was not thrilled with the views of Jupiter. I felt like I got better here in the winter due to their increased humidity. It wasn't that much of a difference. And over there, you could see the Milky Way as clear as day at night every night.
Yeah, I guess viewing conditions can change, dramatically for many reasons, So, does your telescope have the new GPS computer driven stuff? Where you can just punch in the objects and it'll automatically go to the those objects. Do you have that or no?
Well, yes. Actually, my present scope is the GPS, which if I were to cut the wires to the GPS, that my telescope, knowing how I know how to use it, would be just as accurate, exactly the same telescope with accuracy and computerized go-to tracking of all objects. In my opinion, all the GPS does is punch in your confirms your location and the time, the correct time. And other than that, to me, the GPS or not, it doesn't make a difference. But what they're going to drop. I also had a previous model, which was a 10-inch with no GPS, and that was spot on, dead on, accurate. I mean, when I set it up, that was extremely accurate. That was a very, very good scope that I sold. I almost wish I didn't sell that one because it had a nice F6.3, and that was actually better for this area, in my opinion, than my present 12-inch F10. Distracting. that. That would be a skill that I don't have, that I could acquire, but I don't have it now because the details and that I can see with my go-to scope, it's a big difference to me. I do not like using high power unless I have a go-to dead-on accuracy where I don't have to adjust anything because that's when I start to concentrate and see all my details that you would miss unless you have that skill and you have that confidence and you're comfortable with the look you don't look for. I would miss that with manually adjusting all the time.
Yeah, it makes sense. It's nice when, you know, you don't have to deal with that. You can just concentrate on looking through the eyepiece and focusing. And, you know, the objects they put, it's a good thing. Yours is a 12, I think you said 12-inch.
Yes, mine is a 12-inch model F10. I'm not really using the capability, in my opinion, of the, you know, the high power viewing, whereas do wider field viewing, it's harder, you know, even with a focal reducer and wide field eyepiece, it's just a little bit more, you know, there's more glass that the photons have to go through, but I just thought the 6.3 was an excellent compromise, if you want to call it that, for this area. You know, if I lived in Arizona, maybe I would rather have what I have now. But it's not a deal breaker. It's just a milder. It's just an inconvenience.
Now, what sort of mount do you have with that? Is that a some sort of pedestal mount? You know, that's in like a block of concrete or anything like that, or is it a your standard a tripod type of mount?
Well, I could use a pedestal, but what I'm using is a tripod that weighs over 50 pounds, and even at my size, if I walk into my scope, it ain't moving, so this thing weighs, it weighs closer to 150 pounds, the whole setup as I have it. I have it set up a little uniquely in a way, but it's closer to 150 pounds, and it's rock solid, and if I were to bang it, tap it, walk into it, it recovers in less than 3 seconds, actually. To me, it's closer to 1 second of recovery.
Okay, very good. And what about the floor, so to speak, what it's on? I know you have some sort of a shelter for it. Is it, like a wooden type of a floor or concrete or dirt or something? What's it sitting on?
It's on a type of a weighted rubber cushion, and below that is concrete, which is not the best in the summer because the concrete has to cool off. What I might do is spray a little water to help cool it off if it was a hot summer day and that type of thing. Dirt would be a little bit more forgiving. It doesn't get as hot as the concrete or asphalt or anything else. So, yeah, there's a lot of variables. And it does make a difference, but as long as it cools off and acclimates, no harm, no foul.
Oh, very good. Yeah, I should probably look into Stony Brook's program again because I think it's once a month they have the astronomy night where it's open to the public. They usually have a lecture. They have a pretty good program out there for astronomy, so they have all sorts of professors and things like that are quite knowledgeable, and they'll give a lecture inside, and then afterwards everybody runs up to the roof and they open up the scope.
you actually catch the new Cosmos series on TV tonight?
No, I didn't see that, but I did see the 60 Minutes program. They had a nice segment on the big radio telescope setup in, I guess it's Chile.
What kind of programs do the Martians broadcast? That might be better than cable. the sounds of the world, or the universe, rather. What was I going to say? Something about binoculars I wanted to ask you, unless you want to stay on this point of radio telescopes.
you can always ask about binoculars. I'm always interested in those. Go ahead.
I just wanted to confirm something with you, because see, my confidence level goes down. We've had like 2 months of moisture and turbulence and whatever, clouds and everything else you can think of. It's been terrible, but I have a pair of binoculars that should be working rather well. So it was somewhat dark outside, but when I looked at the forecast, the dark sky chart, you know, it basically, the transparency and the seeing was below average, so that's the forecast. But I thought it looked rather good to my eye to some degree. Sometimes I get fooled, but I said, yeah, it's not the best, but it should be adequate for some stargazing. And I noticed that my binoculars looked a little spiky. Not my best pairs, but a new pair that I was using. And I said, well, I guess I'll have to wait till a clearer night. But is that what usually happens? I think the images get a little spiky, the stars get a little spiky when the atmosphere is that bad.
Define spiky.
Yeah, well, that's why I'm a little concerned. I'm not sure which it is, but where instead of it looking like a single dot, you'll see a spike on the top or the bottom. Not more than one point, I don't think. Just it would be hard to focus and hard to adjust the image, because it looks like it just looks has it, like it has that spike on it, and that's the best way I can define it without maybe. I don't know, me learning my nomenclature for these types of apparitions.
Anyway, VG, I think what you're referring to is is usually referred to as a flare, a flaring of the image. If you go online, you know, do a little searching on Google and things like that on optical flaring, you know, using telescopes, binoculars, and stuff like that, and I think you'll find a lot of good information, you know, online, better than, you know, what I can explain. Is this something that normally you don't get, and in this particular session, you know, you were getting the change in, you know, what you were seeing with the binos?
Well, let's call it flaring for now, and I'll have to see if I can. Because if I was looking through a single eyepiece, I guess I would call it that too. Flaring sounds about right. But I really do think it was because of the moisture in the atmosphere that was stopping the being able to get sharp focusing and the whole bit. And I just want to make sure that you would agree that. From what I'm describing, that would be the atmosphere and not the fault of the optics. Like something has changed, or is it possible that it could be either one? And I don't know. That's why I'm asking. I just until I get a nice, clear, you know, confirmed average, an average night, maybe compare a couple of pairs. I won't know until I get that situation.
Yeah, it's hard to say. I'm not sure. I would think that. Because when you say spiky, and when I say flaring, usually that refers to a an elongation, if you will, of the light Instead of when you're, you know, you're looking at a star or a planet, instead of a nice disk, you're seeing a spike off to one side. An aberration, so to speak, in the image. And I don't think that's usually caused by, you know, the atmosphere. That kind of sounds more like, where your eye is in relationship to the eyepiece. Some of the eyepieces, some of the optics, you know, unless you're looking directly in the center of the eyepiece, you can get that flaring. You know, if you're off to one side, left, right, up, down, you know, the image is not going to be, you know, dead spot on, and you're going to get some aberration, which could be, that flaring that you might be seeing.
The reason why I use the word spike was because I've had, when I look through an ocular, a telescope, I would see in the center of the field, I would see a flare both sides on two sides, let's say up and down or sideways. It's right through the middle, like going in and going out the other end. So it would be like a straight line. And that's what I would call more of a flare, I think. And the spike is more where it's not going directly through in a straight line. It's actually just coming out one side. So that's different than what I'm accustomed to seeing with the moisture, I guess, or that's what's caused when I saw the line going through the entire center from end to end.
So no matter what you did with the binocular, adjusting it and focusing it, whatever, you couldn't get rid of that that spike image?
No, that's not true either, because that was part of the problem. I believe I had a bad atmosphere, but I also noticed that moving it around might eliminate that single spike that I see, but if I didn't see it on one side, I might see it on the other, and it was hard for me to focus. Like, it's almost as if the eye relief was so bad that there was not enough room to maneuver and to adjust the pupillary distance to actually get a nice, clear, sharp merging image. Now, again, if I took the same binocular and pointed it at something, at an object, it would look fine, but not on the actual planet. I was like, oh yeah, Jupiter. I was looking at Jupiter at the time, which is kind of bright.
The time is 11:46 p.m.
Well, I guess you're going to have to try it again another night and see if it does it again, and that kind of thing. I it sounds to me like it's something's not adjusted right. I've had that same kind of experience where I'll look through a binocular and it's just not the best image, and a lot of times I just don't have it adjusted perfectly for my where my eyes are. Maybe it's I have to adjust the pupillary distance a little bit, that kind of thing, or I'm looking off to one side ever so slightly. And some binoculars are better than others, the optical quality, the lenses are better, so it all depends. But, as long as you're having a good time and you get a good view, enjoy it, that's what counts. Which binoculars are these that you had trouble with? And 2APG.
These were, or actually are, kind of like auditioning these. These are a Zummel, I'm saying it properly, Zummel 25x100 that I'm evaluating, I'll say. And I know that, yeah, it's possible that the quality control could be bad or prism could be misadjusted and on and on. Maybe the pupillary distance isn't the the same as a better name or better, more expensive pair. So, you know, I'm having a hard time. It could be more than one thing that is out of whack here. We could have terrible eye relief. We can have a misadjusted, misaligned prism. We can have bad atmosphere. So this, maybe I'm not being fair to you, but it was just a horrible viewing session. Let's put it that way.
Gentlemen, the computer is going to be sitting down. We didn't reset the clock. We'll be setting it now, and you know, it's supposed to go off at midnight on Sunday, so find yourself another place to go. Okay, to the
okay, thanks, sir. I'll be a QFY up to the UHF machine, Andy, and 2APG.
Oh, you're gonna be on Landmark UHF? Okay. All right, Eric, thanks for letting us know. And, yeah, that's actually, Eric, that's the loudest I've heard you in a long time. You never sound the same way twice.
The time is 12:49 a.m. 12:49 a.m. 73. And good night from the W2VL repeater.
Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system, code number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link clear.
Auto connecting.
Node number 9126.
Welcome to the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system, code number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link active.
Little spots that, like I said, didn't compound out or wax out, so maybe I'll try a little wet sanding and see if that does it. If not, then, oh well, I gotta live with it.
On that paint, do they put a clear coat on it, like they do on a lot of cars?
Yeah, that was a special kind of paint, too. It was like this three-coat process back then, and I believe there is a clear on it, so if I'm lucky, I'll be able to get them out, but I'm not going to get crazy. They're not that noticeable, only if you sit there and you know what you're looking for.
I'd leave it alone, because if you wet sand it, you'll probably go right through the clear coat. If nothing else.
I may try some small unobtrusive spot and see. But, whatever, it is what it is. So, yesterday I decided to give the Avenger, the Toxic Avenger, a double wash and a wax.
A double wash and a wax? You're not saying you did this yourself.
Yeah, well, I took a trip over to the local car wash, but the line was, like, ridiculously long, and I just didn't feel like hanging out for, like, an hour just for an exterior wash. So I went home and turned on the hose and did it myself.
It was a nice enough day to be doing a car wash, so it's not that big a deal. But why'd you have to wash it twice? You're not efficient enough to do it once?
Well, with the salt and everything that was all over it from the trips upstate, I wanted to make absolutely sure that I got every last little bit of it off. So I used the generic car wash to get the salt off, rinse it, and then I used the stuff you normally wash it with, which has got the wax and stuff in it, that ice car wash, and then I washed it with that, chamoyed it dry, and then I waxed the car.
Okay. It's getting close to that time, then I'll probably end up waxing this car. But it's worth it to me. Let the guys at the garage do it.
Yeah, well, I figure this way I reapply some wax to protect it from anything that may have been washed off or negated by the salt or whatever. So it's back in protected mode. I forgot to reset the clock on the golf cart, so I got hung up by a couple of minutes waiting for enough of it to perk to pour into my cup.
Couldn't you just quickly swap out the carafe and put the cup in? This way you can be shaving while it's perking.
I realized it while I was in the middle of shaving. So once I was finished, I just ran downstairs and flipped it from auto start to on. And then ran back upstairs, finished up what I had to do. But, you know, coffee pots aren't instantaneous, and it was making 10 cups. So there was at least 7 or 8. Probably 6 to 8 or something that in the carafe when I got downstairs. So I had to do the quick pause and pour feature.
I didn't know it had a pause and pour feature. That's a handy feature.
Most coffee pots have those nowadays. All it is it's a little spring-loaded, like, valve at the bottom of the basket when the correction place the valve is open. When the craft is out of position, it closes the valve. But you only have a, you know, you don't have an unlimited amount of time, because now the basket is starting to fill up with liquid instead of the water just running through it.
Wouldn't that have a tendency to make the coffee a little bit stronger also if you get a backup in there?
Not any stronger than it would be normally. The strongest coffee is always the first few cups that come down, because that's the water hitting the grounds all fresh and ready to release their coffee goodness to the water. You'll notice that the water gets lighter and lighter as it runs more and more water, or water runs through the ground. So the end of the pot dripping in there is usually weaker than the beginning of the pot. So you get that extra high octane stuff if you grab it in the beginning.
Yeah, I guess you're right. I was thinking, since it was being in contact with the grounds for a longer period of time, it might get a little stronger. I know someone who still likes the old-fashioned percolator.
There's nothing like extracting every last little bit with a nice Pyrex glass percolator.
I don't think he does the percolator on the stove. I think he does something like the Farberware type.
Yeah, Farberware works too, but with the electric switch on it, you're letting it can decide when it shuts itself off. With the Pyrex glass percolator, you can, you know, leave it on the stove as long as you want.
Yeah, that's why they had that little glass piece at the top so you could see what color it was.
The Pyrex is all glass.
Yes, my parents didn't have a Pyrex one. What they had was either a Farberware or a Go Back Old long enough. It was a metal perk that went on top of the stove.
One of those from camping. And it all had, it was an all aluminum, you know, coffee pot with the little glass bubble on the top. So you could see the coffee percolating up in the top, like you said, to check for color.
Yep. And I remember the ritual. When the coffee was the right color in the Farberware coming through and it shut down, you had to take the top off, take a paper towel or a napkin or something, grab the stem of the grind spout, the perk spout, and pull it out so the bitter oils wouldn't drip down into the coffee. Get it out so it wouldn't turn rancid.
You realize that that's a fallacy, right?
That's what my parents used to do. I'm not a coffee drinker, so I wouldn't be able to say whether it's correct or not.
The oils would have come off the coffee grounds long before the being stopped, but that's despite the...
I don't know. I have one of those 30-cup party perks, and for some reason, after the coffee is made, the light is on, I pull the basket out.
Hey, listen. Old habits die hard.
I don't drink coffee, but people have told me over the years that the coffee I make in that, which is once in a blue moon, turns out to be pretty good. I just take a look. The book says for 30 cups do, I think it was